I think if we keep going at this pace, we will have time for questions at the end for all the panelists. Next, we are going to have a group come up and speak on implementing rhythmic movement in the African-American community. First, we will have Lena Grafton speak, and she will be followed by her colleagues Mary Motley and Dr. Kenneth Sparks. I will introduce Lena, and then she'll subsequently introduce her colleagues. Lena Grafton is the Director of Community Outreach at St. Vincent Charity Hospital. She has an MPH, and she's worked in the field of community health for many years in Cleveland, Ohio. Welcome, Lena.
Good morning. Okay, I am going to talk very briefly about our project, just to give you an overview of what is to come with Mary and Ken. So this is a three-year planning grant that we received from NIH, and let me just go back a little bit. I have no disclosures. Okay. So this is a three-year planning grant that we received through NIH. And this is the intervention that came out of that. So today I'm just going to briefly talk about our objectives, and that's how to establish trust in a CBPR project, and then to identify physical activity programs that have proven to benefit the youth. So CBPR, the key elements of CBPR is it builds on the strengths and the resources within the community. So those are things that already exist within the community and build upon those, not to try to reinvent the wheel. And then it fosters capacity building among partners, and then it focuses on the local relevance of public health issues. And of course, there is a long-term process and commitment to sustainability. So during our project, we had four aims. And the first one is to develop a partnership between the community through an existing initiative called Building Healthy Communities that was a spearheaded project through the local hospital, St. Vincent Charity Hospital, but to also partner them with Cleveland State University so both the residents of the community and the researchers learn to understand CBPR together. The second aim was to work with residents to define a focus. Now, we knew through the grant that our intent was obesity, but we wanted to find out what part of obesity interests them most. We didn't want to define that for them. And then number three, that was develop an intervention based on best practices. And number four, have a pilot project by the end of the grant. So, CBPR methods and building trust. This was very interesting for us because as we started building communication around CBPR and our project, the community said, we don't just want to be involved. This is information that you're giving us, but it's information that everybody needs to know. So they said, we'll work with you throughout the process, but we also want to have town hall meetings that anyone from anywhere can be a part of. So we did. So we held several large town hall meetings to give updates on the progress of our intervention. So that was one trust building initiative. And then we surveyed over 400 community members about our intervention, obesity, and the things they would like to see happening within this time frame. So through the appreciative inquiry process, the community decided that their children were first, but the children weren't separate from the family, so we needed to include the families, of course. And then they wanted to make sure that exercise and nutrition was a part of this intervention. You couldn't have one without the other. So, building trust using a community health worker. This was very instrumental because the community health worker was, of course, someone that was either from their community or a community like that. So they had some buy-in from the residents that already lived in the community that we were working with. So it was very easy for the community health worker, we call them health advocates, to go into the community and talk about our program in layman's terms, to answer and filter any questions that the community might have, and to also reassure them that this is a viable project and you should be a part of it. as long as it meets your needs. So there was a case management model used with the community health worker. We also asked her during the actual intervention to come in and talk to the parents and the children about any barriers that they might have being involved in this project. So, of course, as many of you already know, transportation might be a barrier. Also, social issues. Of course, we wanted to address health issues, but also social issues. And one of those issues was, well, I really want my kid to be a part of this, but I'm ashamed of this. We don't have any beds at home. Can you help us? So we linked them to resources that they could have those issues addressed. And now Mary is going to talk about our wellness component of the intervention.
Okay, first off, let me tell you how excited I am to be here. We're from Cleveland, Ohio, and it's snowing there. So if any of you want an in-service, we can do this for the rest of the winter, and we'll go on. I actually am the director of the undergraduate program for health, physical education, recreation, and dance, which really means exercise science and sport management, but we still have, you know, the other name as we're going along. I have actually been teaching. This is my 30th year. So I have a little experience doing this, and I will tell you that this is one of the most difficult projects I've ever been involved in my life, because it was all voluntary, and a lot of the kids that we worked with were best deal kids, so their intent was good. They started toward the program every day and then got sidetracked by things like swimming pools or their friends or, you know, whatever else occurred, and so we had to have something that was attractive enough to them that we were the best deal. And, you know, sometimes that challenged us, you know, as we went along. So they had to have fun at the same time that they were doing it. We made, you know, or Peter and the people who put the program together early on decided that we needed to look at the whole total child in terms of trying to do it. And we found that out even in doing this, that we needed, you know, parental support, active lifestyles. We needed their mothers, which were primarily the people that were involved, to say, hey, you know, you need to get to that program every day. Coming in, we had goals to motivate the children to live healthy lifestyles. And we organized the activity program around the NASPE standards, National Association for Sport and Physical Education, which is, you know, our national organization. And I'll tell you, and Ken's going to talk a little bit about the results. He works in my department, so he's my friend and my colleague. And one of the things that we did was we looked at his results in terms of trying to plan activities for the kids. You know, those that they were, you know, stronger in, we tried to sustain, and those that they were weaker in, we tried to bring in activities that would increase that during the period of time that we were there. We looked at aerobic capacity, body composition, muscular strength, endurance, and flexibility as they were going along. We used traditional and non-traditional games. I'm going to say that we did very little traditional, because what that did was it showed such a huge difference in the kids, you know, whether or not they were skilled, whether they were boys or girls. And you have to understand that our kids were boys and girls between the ages of 8 and 12. First off, there's a lot of difference between boys and girls in that age. And then if you talk about between 8 and 12 and trying to find activities, traditional activities did not work well with them. We needed to go outside and find things that, you know, that were very, very different. The other thing that we found out was that kids had to be able to cooperate with each other, and they needed to improve their listening skills, because until those things were done, nothing else mattered. You know, they had to listen to us before they could do it. They had some favorite activities. They loved the skating. They loved gymnastics. You know, Peter came in and did some karate with me, and, you know, they very much enjoyed, you know, anything that was different. You know, when we brought in traditional activities, they already knew how to do it, right? Because we know kids in that age, they know everything, and they could teach it to us. So sometimes you might do that as motivation, but most of the time we tried to stay away. One of the things that, you know, that we really enjoyed was when we brought the parents in for parents' night, we tried to make sure that they also, and, you know, every single time that we had a parents' night, I tried to make sure that we had taught the kids something that they could teach their parents and that they could take to them. And so whether that was cornhole or that was ladder golf or whatever. We also had a thing that we wanted the kids to be involved with health and fitness around the world. So every week we brought in a healthy recipe and a game from another country. And then we talked to them about where this was at and what kinds of things they did there. And, you know, sort of across that curriculum, right? I'm a teacher, so I have to do that thing as we go along. And the kids really enjoyed it. And then we had them send it home. And, you know, the parents would come in and say, well, you know, I kind of got into that and I made that recipe and it was really good. And, you know, and so they enjoyed, you know, that kind of an activity too. Finding out the best deal kids. What we did was we put together a fitness calendar and tried to give them activities that their parents had to sign off on. Now, I'm under no illusion that kids don't lie. But, you know, what I really wanted to do was I didn't care about that. What I cared about was that they were looking at it, they had to bring it back, so there was an attention there. And we hoped that because of that, they were doing a little bit more than they had done before. And, you know, by the way, they got some pretty nice prizes for doing that, whether that was, you know, sometimes movie tickets, you know, they got a computer in the end. I mean, there were some things that, you know, that we brought in that happened. We learned a lot of lessons. You know, like listening skills, cooperation, those kinds of things that they had to go, and I got to keep going. We also had a dance program, and we started out thinking that the kids were going to do a lot of, because the parents wanted them to do hip-hop, and very early on our person in dance said, you know, we want to do a lot of African-American dances, we're going to do a little bit of hip-hop, and then we're going to move on. And so there was a lot of other kinds of activity that were brought in. The girls liked it a lot better than the boys did, okay? You know, there's absolutely no question about that. We also had a nutrition component, and the guy who worked with us on that was very good. He, like us, found out that, you know, they're going to listen a whole lot more if they get to drink smoothies that are healthy and if they get to play games. We needed to have this whole thing be active learning. These kids are active. They came to us after school. So they had been in school, you know, until, you know, 3 or 4 o'clock in the afternoon. We needed to get them in there, get them moving, and get them having fun because they were tired of listening to teachers, and they had been hammered all day long. And we did lots of fun things. Like, they loved making the rice cakes into faces and... lessons learned in terms of nutrition, food first, be honest and real, kids don't shop. That was one of the things that we had to do, is we had to find an alternative that people could actually afford in our neighborhood when we were going. And now, my friend and colleague, Ken Sparks, is going to tell us about our conclusions.
Thank you, and good morning. As Mary said, we're enjoying the weather. A little bit of my background. I'm director of the Human Performance Lab at Cleveland State University, and I've been working with the inner city movement not only at this project, but with the Hispanic Healthy Initiative program. I was worked with that for a couple years, and for about 9 years I was project director of a national youth sports program, which we serviced about 400 kids a day, bringing them to the university. And so we've really worked the inner city. The kids are just—they're great to work with. And with this project, we were part of this was to do the physiological measurements. And when you're measuring kids at 8 to 12 years old, one of our goals is to get a comprehensive assessment. But also, you need to have something that during your assessment that is fun, enjoyable for the kids, so that they'll participate, and at the same time it's non-competitive, so if they're not really getting into because they'll shy away from competitiveness activities if it's. And we looked at certain risk factors of related to heart disease, because diabetes, heart disease goes right along with the obesity trends in the Cleveland area. We have a very high incidence, higher than the national average for these things, and it's quite a problem, as it is in a lot of the urban areas around the country. Some of the measurements we took for the disease risk, we measured their blood pressures. We also did lipid profiles and glucose measurements with the finger stick with the kids. That was a real treat to get them to agree to this, but they found that it wasn't too bad. We also did health risk appraisals, looking at behavioral changes and attitudes towards physical activity and nutrition. And these are the questionnaires that are put out by the CDC. And Our physical components that was kind of fun for the kids were things that they were maybe used to being measured in some of the schools. But we used the FitnessGram, which was developed by the Cooper Institute, and has several components to it. They get nice certificates generated from participation in this, and so they have a lot of fun with it. And it also has a lot of rhythmic things. The components, obviously we did the height weight to look at body mass index. We measured flexibility, strength measurements. Now the strength measurements, these are a modified type of push-up that is to music. And so there is a rhythm to these things. And we measured body fat using skinful calipers. And our cardiovascular measurement was using the pacer run. Now this is a rhythmic run that you have to have space to do it, obviously, and it's to music, and the cadence picks up, and so they keep going, and they see how many laps that they can run back and forth across the gymnasium, and it gets a little faster, and whenever they can't stay up with the rhythm to the music, well, then they drop out, and you count how many laps that they have actually covered. In our participation, we started out, we evaluated 90 children initially, and we had 73 actually went through the test retest. So we had an 81% participation, which we felt was really very, very good in getting these to come back, especially after they had to come in for their finger sticks with the blood analysis and so forth. The data that we found, we did a statistical analysis, and we found that over the 12 weeks that Mary was running the intervention, which, again, I work with Mary very closely, especially on the pretest, because her curriculum really reflected our findings from these pretest results, because we needed to work on things that were needed by the kids and sustain things that they were really pretty good in. And the things that we found were that these kids grew over those 12 weeks. When you got 8 to 12-year-olds, they're going to grow. And so we did see significant findings in height and weight. Now, that was, if on the next slide I've got to show this, but they didn't have increases in body mass index. And they also did not have increases in body fat measurements. So they were growing, but they were not increasing their fat, which was really important. So statistics can kind of give you a different view here. We did see that they did lower some of their systolic blood pressure came down from pre to post. Now, all these levels were within normal range to start with, even so we didn't see a lot of changes in some of the blood measures that we looked at. The other things that were really important about this whole program was that we found that in the cardiovascular, which was the pacer test, we found that they did increase in their cardiovascular fitness. We also found that their upper body strength improved, and as well as measurements in flexibility. So the things that Mary was working with in the intervention program was really, really working. And from a behavioral standpoint, from our health risk appraisals, we found that the kids were eating less dessert, which was, you know, that was one of the things that we found, and their overall nutrition improved. Now, the one thing that we didn't, it was kind of surprising, even though we found the improvement in their overall physical fitness and assessment, their perception of increasing physical activity and from a questionnaire didn't reflect that. We didn't see that they sort of made this a behavior, and they wanted to they didn't see it as a big change, even though they had this change, but it didn't reflect in this. So when I put all the things that we did find in one slide, you can see that over the course of 12 weeks, we did see some statistically significance in several areas of, especially results on physical activity. We did improve their fitness levels. Now, of course, we haven't gone back and did a follow-up with this, but we were hoping that over a 12-week program that we did make some headway into this problem of physical inactivity and obesity in the Cleveland area. We did learn some lessons, and obviously motivation is a key. And the staff, we had our graduate assistants and so forth helping us and working with all the programs, and they were great. They really related well with the children. We did find that running a program in the spring, we did have some missed weeks prior to in the testing due to spring break. So you want to make sure you look at your timing on when you're doing all these things. You have to really have clear instructions and your test procedures. It's really critical to be able to relate to these kids. And obviously the PACER test requires gym space of at least 80 feet. Well, we found that that was a problem when we went into some of the neighborhood recreation centers that didn't have a gymnasium. And so we had to transport over to a neighboring recreation center to actually do some of our post-testing. Also, summer program activities. We had one cohort that was through the summer, and you're competing with so many other activities that are going on in the summer that it made it difficult to get them back to testing and to actually participate. And since we were doing some blood measurements, well, the issues of early morning testing was a problem. Because they had to be fasted for blood lipids and glucose to be valid, that even though I didn't consider it that early, but we started testing at like 8:30, 9 o'clock, but at 8:30 or 9 o'clock on a Saturday morning was fairly early in these neighborhoods. So these were lessons that we learned about this, and we found that we, these kids were really very good about getting there. We had good support. We actually did some of the testing on some of their parents that wanted to be tested. We would do some of their blood lipids and blood pressure measurements and things like this. So the overall results we felt were very positive with this.
Okay. Thank you.
And I'd like to thank all the people that worked on the project. There's the list of them. Okay, thank you.
We have time for one quick question for the three of them, and then we'll have to move on.
Yes.
In my work, I always look at sometimes we use incentives. What was the range of incentives you used to motivate?
Well, we had a lot of incentives to get them back to testing sometimes. We had some incentives, for instance, on the summer group, to keep the incentives, we actually had school supplies for going back to school in the fall. We, uniforms, books, movie tickets. Yeah, we had 73 that came pre-post, but we had 90 that we pre-tested. So everybody that came back for the post-testing.
There was an award for participation for each session, for each group, each intervention, and there was four. So there was four computers total. Yeah. But
right. So there had to be incentives built into the program to be successful. Okay, thank you.
Well, thank you, Lena, Mary, and Kenneth. Next, we are going to hear from Judith Anderson. Judith is a school system coordinator with Project SUNY at Buffalo. And she also is at the Primary Care Research Institute. She's the community health coordinator with focus on minority health. Judith, one moment here. Judith is going to